Now you should listen to this, because this concerns you.
This is about a evil genius in love.
If this works, you're some kind of evil genius, honest to God.
That's when the magic happens. Mm-hmm.
Hello, 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 friends and neighbors. It's me, it's Dave Slusher. It's the Evil Genius Chronicles, evilgeniuschronicles.org. Thank you for listening. This is show number, what the hell show is it? This is show number 228. It's being recorded on November 11th, 2008. It's a week past Election Day, and it's not really euphoria from my perspective, but it's... You know, it's relief. I'm glad that things are over and we can get back to normal life. Let's get to the business. This show is Creative Commons license, non-commercial attribution. The music you're listening to is The Gentle Readers. They're at gentlereaders.com. And if you are in the vicinity of Atlanta, you can see them November 15th. I'm going to be there. Eddie's Attic. There will be two shows. Gentle Readers will be opening for the Susie French Connection. Depending on when you hear this, not a lot of notice, or perhaps negative notice because it's already happened, but November 15th, Saturday, November 15th in Atlanta. I'll be there. You be there. You be square. That's the only deal. GentleReaders.com. Thank you, Gentle Readers. I love you. Show's not work safe. Show's not kid safe. Let's get to it. Oh, and you can buy a stuff package if you want to support the show. Stuff. EvilGeniusChronicles.org/stuff. I've been super, super cognizant and critical of the opening of people's shows lately. I've heard so many that drag ass so hard at the beginning of the show that I'm almost too self-conscious to start the show. So let's just kick this mother off. This is a show featuring an interview I recorded at Dragon Con this year. It's taken me a while to get to it. It's been about 2 months almost since I did it's been over 2 months. Oh my God. It's been like 11 weeks ago I recorded this interview. But this is with Jason Fian and Randy Chertko. You might know them as two of the guys in Beatnik Turtle, a very pod-friendly band. They do podcast theme songs. They did the Song of the Day. They said, I see Jonathan Colton's Song of the Week. I raise him Song of the Day. And they did it. I've played them on the show before. I met these guys at Dragon Con, and we had a hell of a time, and we did this interview. But I'm breaking the interview into two parts, mainly because since I want to surround each interview with a song, I get four Beatnik Turtle songs out of that deal, right? So we're going to do this. This is part one of the interview. And to kick it off, let's have a nice, fun, pseudo-Irish drinking song. This is from their album Shamrock, which is full of Irish and or pseudo-Irish drinking songs. This is a song that just covers it all. It's entitled Beer, Beer, Beer. And it works because when I met them, they were drinking beer and beer and beer, and I was drinking beer and beer and beer. So here we go. Beatnik Turtle.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Randy.
And I'm Jason.
And we're with Beatnik Turtle, and you're listening to Evil Genius Chronicles. Was that enough enthusiasm?
All right, here we go. Without further ado, this is me interviewing Randy and Jason about their band, about their book, The Indie Band Survival Guide from Dragon Con 2008. Here we go. I'll be back at the end. Or actually the middle, but I'll be back at the end of part one.
The Indie Band...
Screwed that up. All right, here we go.
So I'm here at Dragon Con 2008, and I'm interviewing Randy Chertkow and Jason Feehan. They are of the band Beatnik Turtle, and they have written the Indie Band Survival Guide. So welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. This is Randy. Thank you very much. Just so you can recognize the voices, hi, I'm Randy Chertkow. Thanks. I'm happy to be here. Looking forward to it.
Hi, I'm Randy Chertkow. No, I'm Jason Feehan, and thanks for... talking to us.
So as it turns out, this is kind of a happy accident that we're even doing this interview, because I've been getting your press releases from your publicist, and I had put this in the do this after Dragon Con because I don't have time to do anything else before Dragon Con, and then I met you guys at a party. So I'm actually delighted this interview came out and we didn't have to do it over Skype. So I don't know if it's explicitly mentioned in the book, but you know, take those happy accidents when they fall in your lap.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, I mean, we're big believers in that ourselves because, frankly, the book couldn't have happened without, even the book itself, and a lot of the best things that happened in our band were just accidents that dropped in our lap that we just basically were able to run with it.
So tell that story about how the book came about.
Well, the book came about when, you know, we had gotten all the books in the space on how to succeed as an independent band, and there was nothing out there that basically didn't tell you how to find a label and get out there. And that's not really useful to tell you how to make a CD or how to copyright your music or anything like that. So with all the research that we did, we decided to share it from our own website. And the thing about that is we released it under a Creative Commons license, which I'm sure you talk about along the way. And we're big fans of sharing basically what we know. We released it as a 100-page, 50,000-word guide for musicians from our website. And it got picked up in blogs. It got picked up, you know, all over the new media, basically. Next thing you know, I got an email in my inbox from Billboard magazine. And they decided to actually do a feature article about that in our band. And none of that would have happened if we didn't give it away. After that, the Associated Press was interested, Reuters, and next thing you know, we had an agent call us, and the book came about. So we basically took what was the 100-page guide online, and we spent, after dealing with the publisher, 9 months just intensively rewriting it, researching it.
Writing the book that we always wanted. You know, that's what we did.
And... you know, from there, it happened. And actually, one of the points I like to make about it, and it's interesting, they just did an article in creativecommons.org about it. This book couldn't have happened without the Creative Commons. And number two, this idea that I keep hearing out there that the Creative Commons license destroys the commercial value of anything it touches is completely misguided and wrong. And we're living examples of that.
In what way... would you, if you're talking to a musician who is worried that the Creative Commons license is going to hurt the commercial appeal to that, well, I mean, what do you say to somebody?
You know, it's a difficult question, and it's not something that I can give you a blanket answer for every musician. However, the key thing there is to know exactly what you want out of your music. And there's another aspect to it that I'd like to bring up that we actually ran into recently. We had Arielle Hyatt, mm-hmm. who I think really described it very well. It's what she calls the funnel, and it's what every business does. And, I mean, when you're talking about this Creative Commons and is worried about giving it away, there's really only one thing that you're interested in talking about, which is the kind of money that you can make from your music. It's a very fair question. The funnel says what you do is you introduce people into whatever your brand is, whatever it is that you make. It could be any kind of business at all. You know, when we're talking music, naturally you want to get people interested in your music, in the brand of your band, or whatever image you have for it, all of that kind of stuff. And you always want to make the entrance into the funnel very inexpensive, very cheap. And that could be your music. It could be other aspects of, it could be your videos. It could be anything you want. The funnel tries to bring people down into the center part where you're actually charging money for whatever service it is. And, you know, right now I see you nodding because you're probably thinking of a bunch of businesses that do the same thing. You're like, oh, yeah, that's right. They introduced me that way. And next thing I know, you know, I'm looking at the premium items and maybe I'll buy one or two of them. It's that kind of process that goes about. So you just need to think of it as a long-term strategy. The Creative Commons is one method to make it known that your fans can freely trade your music. And personally, I mean, in ourselves, because we have a band as well, we look at somebody giving their friend a free copy of our music, a new fan. That's not what we call a lost sale.
It's a new fan, and it's a new fan you didn't have to pay the bandwidth for.
Absolutely.
We should make it clear what the Creative Commons license really is. I mean, what it is it's a license to the world. It's a license to the world that says, look, you can share this music, you can pass it around, this MP3 file or whatever that we make available at our website. You have to attribute us, you know, Beatnik Turtle. And then the third thing is you can't use it for commercial purposes. That's big. So what you're doing is you are now angling your music to help promote yourself and awareness of your band, which is really what any indie band needs more than anything else, is to rise out of obscurity so that people actually know who you are mm-hmm. and what music you make.
So one of the themes I've gotten from, you know, kind of talking to you over the weekend and, you know, from your site, and the book is littered with this, is you guys are taking the long view. This is not about, this is never about a disc. This is about a career. And you're kind of, it's you know, it seems like to me, from an outsider, and you guys know way better than me, that the music business, the industry we think of when we think of the big companies, they are concentrated on selling an item, and you guys are more talking about having a career and having a long-term career.
And that's absolutely true. You know, one of the things that we talk about very early on in the book, in the first chapter, and we don't, I want to make clear, we don't spend time in the book talking about the industry and the theory of how things work. We
Major
actually talk about how to do things. But very early on, what you have to get rid of is the business model that worked in the past for the major labels. That's not the same as what works for an indie musician, and actually, that's not the same of what will work for a musician. I mean, one of the things that they miss, as you think about their model and try and copy it, is that it hasn't been very good for musicians in terms of their own career. They don't tend to make a lot off of it, just doing a burst and then basically disappearing into obscurity. I mean, what happens is, let's face it, the major labels, because of the way they worked, is to focus on a band when they did something, and then they'd move on to the next new thing.
Right.
But there you still are, and you still got your name associated with it. So what happens when you take it back into your own hands and don't even think about going with the label, for example? Well, obviously you're going to think long-term because you're not going to be able to move on to the next band. You need to keep working on your own stuff. Our band's been together for 11 years now, and you have to take that kind of view if you want to get anywhere.
Yeah, and the thing about the book is it's about if you want to make money, yeah, there are the techniques that are in the book, no doubt about it. But it's also about, you know, even for whatever type of musician you are, if you're a hobbyist and just want to get your music out there, there is an audience out there for your music, period. You know, we talk about how every song has been bought on iTunes. That means there's room out there. There are audiences that are hungry for music, and there's room for you in the pool. And that's what this book really is about. It's not just about making money and finding a career as a musician. It covers the whole gamut of, like the book talks about. We talk about your brand and your website and how important it is, and also your web presence, you know, being in these social networks and stuff like that. But also playing live and distribution, how to get your music distributed and use these tools and services that are out there now that weren't out there 5 years ago or even 10 years ago that you can leverage and, you know, get your music distributed across the globe. And the other thing that we talk about is there's no such thing as a local band anymore. If you're on the internet, you're global, which is absolutely fantastic because I don't care what kind of music you play. Somewhere on this planet, connected to the internet, is somebody who digs your music. And they just don't happen to live in your city, maybe, you know, where you might be playing out live. But they live in the UK or Australia. I mean, we do this thing called the Song of the Day, .com, where we release 365 songs, you know, one every day of last year. And the how many countries have, I mean, there are so many people from around the world that have listened to that
and
subscribed.
I think just one day while we were writing the book, we're like, well, I wonder how many countries it visited. I think it was something like 76.
Yeah. I mean, these are, I mean, how it's amazing the time that we're in. And the techniques that we talk about in the book actually are ones that you can use right away to actually get your music out there and find your fans.
And you know what? We didn't market ourselves in 76 countries.
No. We just marketed ourselves to the internet.
So I'll give you guys a real-world example of that from my life. In the days when MP3.com was existent, I found a band, and I don't know the name of the band, and that was they were a South African band that played reggae, but with that kind of Soweto sound guitar style, that kind of scratchy, herky-jerky, and I thought it was the most fantastic stuff I had ever heard. And I never heard anything like it. I downloaded it on a work computer. And then MP3.com went out of business,
yeah,
and I went to a different job, and I don't have that. I don't know who it is. I've spent literally 9 years, every couple months, I try to find who this was, and I can't do it. But there's an example of no niche is so small. I am looking for the South African guitar sound reggae.
Yeah.
And it's out there, and I know it is, and I can't find it.
Yeah, that's a good story about how you're here in the States and you discover this music. It's also a story about how that band didn't brand itself in some aspects because you can't remember the name, and you can't find them. They should be on the web somewhere.
It's a great point because, and one of the things we talk about, we talk about so many things in there, but you put your music out there, and we talk about ID3 tagging, and most people are pretty familiar with that, which is, of course, the tagging mechanism you can put on MP3 and AAC and other styles. And
to add more data,
And one of the things that you could put is your website, and we always do that.
In the comments field.
Yes, in the the comments field. There's actually a website field in ID3 and V2. And, I mean, I remember I was at a conference not long ago talking to some musicians. It was an indie music conference. And we were talking about the book because it hadn't come out yet. And they're like, well, what kind of stuff is in it? I was, you know, making a list. And I'm like, for example, we talk about ID3 tagging. And there were two musicians sitting next to me about as far as you two were. And one of them was just nodding their head. And the other was, what's ID3 tagging? And I'm like, okay, I am so glad that we went back and talked about each little thing. It sounds like that's a small thing. But that small thing of putting their name in all of those fields meant that they would have continued to have you as a fan and could have sold you their next album.
Right, you're making the MP3 a vehicle to remind the person, hey, this is my band, here's my website, if you want to find more stuff, there you go. You can put your copyright information in there as well. It's so important, and that's the level of detail that's in the book.
Right, I mean, and add the album art, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I know, there you go. It's so important, and either the album art or some sort of a logo, and keep it consistent. I mean, that's right. What we talk about in the branding chapter, how important it is to be consistent and be repetitive so that you just brand yourself and your style of music and your image in your fans.
I don't know. I've seen this kind of this level of thinking in the podcast world, which is I don't know how many MP3 files I have downloaded from a podcast named Episode 3.
There you go. Missed opportunity. Completely missed opportunity. It's really kind
of.
We
even talk about that. Yeah. Naming the MP3 with your band name and the song title.
Yeah. I mean, that's the level of detail that's in the book. I mean, these are nice techniques and they add up. They really do add up to actually build your web presence and your brand and so people can discover you.
The more often they see your name, the more they remember you.
Yep.
It takes. I think I heard in some marketing, we didn't talk about this in here, but in some marketing book that I think it takes 8 to 10 touches for somebody to actually start to remember and recognize your brand. Touches are whatever, you know, your logo or your name heard from somebody saying it or a poster or something like that. Think about that, that each of those small things makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. So now, as an example, here's the reason I know your guys, the name of your band, is the fact that in the early days of podcasting, I was a listener to the Board Game Geeks, Geek Speak.
Yeah.
And I heard your name every time a new episode came down. And I thought, who's this funny, you know, this kind of fun ska song that opens this show that I like, which has a positive association for me. And that's always when I'm hearing your name is in this positive context. Like, here we go with this thing I want to do.
Yeah, that's the Geek Speak theme. That was back in 2004.
Yeah,
right?
That was among the first podcasts.
Yeah, that was that might have been one of the first theme songs of a podcast.
It could be. And absolutely, that's exactly how it works. It's nice and simple.
Yeah. So I like one of the tips that you guys have, which is definitely musicians really underutilize this, is the, you know, GoDaddy is cheap as hell. There is no reason to not register your band name and to not funnel everything through your domain. When your main web presence is a MySpace page, that really operationally doesn't work as well for you.
That's right. Absolutely. And I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that that I think may not be as obvious to some people. Now, MySpace is simple, and actually it has an advantage of being very consistent. So there are some people who like to seek out a band's MySpace page because they know where to find the player. They know where to find the bio information and everything else. But when it comes to trying to, for example, give publicity information about your band, ideas about, you know, like your logo you might want to share so that if they want to put your logo up on a poster for a venue, it's easy to do that on your website. It's easy to sell your albums and have entire pages that just help your store and pitch your T-shirt. It's not easy to do that on MySpace.
But not only that, I mean, you also don't get any statistics. You don't know exactly who is how people discovered you, who referred you to that page.
Yeah,
right?
Like the 76 countries thing that I was talking about.
You would never
that,
know.
That, the way we were able to know that, actually, is because we looked at the stats for our website on our web host. Yes, you get to see that, and even more importantly is the referrer. We have people writing about us that never use our name, so it doesn't come up in a Google search or any other kind of search. But they'll say, hey, check out this band. Well, you're not going to search on this band. You're not going to find yourself. But if anybody clicks on that, your web statistics will tell you that.
Yeah, that picks
it up. How important
is
that? It's extremely important. You can find out where your fans are hanging out. Knowing your fans is probably one of the most important things you can do as a band.
Right, especially now. The other thing about MySpace is you're competing with their advertising and all that kind of stuff. Now, it's very clear in the book that we are like, you should have a website of your own that you control, that you have these statistic tools and stuff like that. But also, it's not to say that you shouldn't have a MySpace page.
It just shouldn't be the primary.
Exactly. In fact, you should have a MySpace page. You should be in these other, what we call, web presences, like Facebook and Reverb Nation and Twitter. You know, there is so much out there, and all that should point back to your website. It should be that's your home base, basically, and that's where you get to send your message. And you use these other tools to connect with your audience and to connect with your fan network, as we say in the book. So there is a place for them. It's just they cannot replace your website with it.
And I just want to add something to that. There are a lot of web presences out there. These things didn't even exist 2 years ago. And yet, there are great ways of exposing your music to people. There's a huge list of them, and it's very hard to sort of keep track of them all, which is why part of this project, it's not just a book. There's a website as well that we've put out there called the Indie Band Survival Guide. Because we needed to track it all. It's indiebandsurvivalguide.com. Yeah, I was about to do a Homestar Runner. It's .net. It's .com. Sorry. Indiebandsurvivalguide.net. It's .com.
We were very conscious of putting in the techniques and the tools and the philosophy and the lessons in the book, but then reserving the website for all the, you know, the web presences and the websites and tools and all those other kind of things that could go out of date. The website's the home for that. the book is all about the lessons and being as practical as you can and giving recipes. You know, like, here's how you can get on college radio. Follow these steps. You know, and the website, which is what Randy's talking about, actually has all these. Hey, there's Twitter. Hey, there's Reverb Nation.
Hey, here's all the college radio stations.
Here's all the
we
college radio
have
stations.
It all there.
Right. Exactly.
So you guys have a tip that, you know, until I read it, I really did not realize a hand I'm underplaying, even with my own personal podcast, which is every week I get, or every episode I give out my Gmail address. There is no particular reason why I couldn't have dave@evilgeniuschronicles.org and just redirect that email back to Gmail, but give people my URL, you know, my domain name every single time I touch them. And so I am really kind of giving, I'm giving away part of the game by not doing it that way.
Yeah, it's very subtle, but it really works. You're building your brand.
And remember the 8 to 10 touches? Every time you say the name, Evil Genius Chronicles, Evil Genius Chronicles, there's two
Evil.
For you.
That's the Genius Chronicles.
That's four. So we only have four more, four to six. It really works for you. And, you know, whether you mail me at IndieBandSurvivalGuide.com or Beatnik Turtle, it's the same thing. It all comes to the same account for me, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's to me the, like, you've got the philosophical level that kind of underpins the books, but I really like a lot of the just feet on the street, hands-on tips that we want to stress are not necessarily even band-specific. I mean, I got a lot out of it from my podcast just for things just like that.
Absolutely. I mean, the book really is, it's written for musicians, but it does cover, I mean, it could be for any business, actually.
Any business, and certainly more than anything else, the stuff that we write about can be for anybody who's in, let's just say, an area where distribution has finally fallen down and you can finally get directly to your fans. And it's the same kind of stuff. The publicity isn't change. I mean, we could easily take that book, take out the stories that are music-specific, and put in podcasting and have a podcasting book.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also true for, what, video, writing?
Yeah.
Nowadays, because you can self-publish fairly easily nowadays.
It's just the music industry was the first one that was hit really hard by the web. And
Can I say my pet theory? My pet theory is something I like to call preferred format. Preferred format for music is to have something portable so you can carry your entire music collection around with you in a little rectangular device. And so the MP3 became the preferred format, and it has some problems. I mean, let's face it, a lot of them are lower quality. Yeah. You know, there's all kinds of issues. But it became the preferred format. Preferred format for books, for writing, let's say. Let's keep it generic. It's that piece of dead tree that you're holding in your hand right
Which
now.
Which is very convenient.
However, you know, I will not tell you that I'm not lusting for and waiting for the price to drop on Kindles. So, you know, that could be next.
Absolutely.
Yep. It could be the iPod.
And when that happens, it's the same stuff. I mean, throughout. There's some chapters that would change because we have a whole set of stuff on recording your music. Well, that changes. You could do recording your podcast and writing. There's the process of writing. But there's so many things you could take advantage of out there to get your name out there and directly touch your fans no matter what you do.
And that's what the book's about.
Right. So,
all right, we're going to stop it right there. I actually like that thought about directly touching fans. If you're a fan of the show, why don't you get yourself somewhere where I can directly touch you? That was our Craig Ferguson-like creepy moment of the show. All right, let's play another Beatnik Turtle song. This one is from a different album. This is from an album called All in a Day's Work. And I almost called an audible and switched to a different song because, my day job is killing me lately. I say that a lot. Sometimes it kills me and then sometimes it's not. And right now it is again. This is a song, I'm actually not sure what this has to do with the titular theme of this album, which is, you know, songs about jobs and stuff like that. But this is Mason Rocket, Spy Extraordinaire. Here we go. Beatnik Turtle.
Facing certain doom, and almost restless.
Beatnik Turtle from All in a Day's Work, and that was Mason Rocket, Spy Extraordinaire. All right, my friends, that's going to do it for this show. I will be back not as long a gap until the next show, and I will present part two of this interview with Randy and Jason about the Indie Band Survival Guide. I really, really enjoyed this book. It's an easy read, but it is a damnably useful read. And to prove that point, I think I mentioned it to them in this first part. If you want to get in touch with me, dave@evilgeniuschronicles.org. Not that other address I've given out 200 times, but dave@evilgeniuschronicles.org. And like I said at the top, Christmas is coming. If you want some fantastic giftware, the stuff package is the gift that keeps on giving. It gives to them and it gives to me. That's the quinella, my friends. EvilGeniusChronicles.org/stuff. Show notes at EvilGeniusChronicles.org. Links to all this stuff. More information about all these things. And pretty much that's it. We will be have a short turnaround after a little refractory period. We will come back with the second part of the episode. Just right soon, my friends. So anyway, that's it. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Randy. And I will catch you again next time. Dave Slusher, out.